Perfect. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the Leadership Lounge. We're here for another month, and I'm pleased to be joined this month by Vicky Gascoigne-Cecil. Vicky is the head teacher at Worlingworth Primary School and the interim head at Sir Robert Hitchin Primary School, all at the same time. So Vicky is ideal for us to explore our topic today. So welcome, Vicky. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and the kind of roles that you do. What is it entails being a head teacher at two schools at once?
Hello. So being a head teacher of two schools, it's a busy job. It's a really enjoyable job. I get to interact and support the strategic development of two different schools. It is challenging. There are lots of pressures and demands, but ultimately it's having an influence over lots of children and their life chances, which is what I find really exciting.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for joining us. And so we're going to be looking today at a really important topic for kind of all leaders, whether they lead in a school or elsewhere. And actually, without a doubt, leading in any organisation through kind of COVID times that we've had has been a really high pressure job. And whatever sector, whether it's education, business, charitable sector, there's a lot of pressure at the moment. And as a leader, we need to strategically lead through that pressure, don't we? But the ability to think clearly under pressure is really key as leaders. And in my coaching, I've worked with leaders to help them develop clear thinking skills whilst managing their emotions for these moments. And over the last few years, I've got to know you, Vicky, haven't
Indeed.
I, and,
yep.
and how you've managed some really stressful situations, some of which we'll explore today in the Leadership Lounge, but how you've also managed to make wise decisions in those moments. And that has been based on your ability to think clearly under pressure. So that's the topic we're going to explore today. So thank you for joining us. We're going to look at thinking clearly under pressure. So here we are on the Leadership Lounge, and Vicky, some of our listeners will be head teachers, but some of them will not be. So just tell us a little bit about what are the types of pressures that, as a head teacher, you face on a regular basis?
So we work with little people, we work with children, and they are unpredictable, and mm-hmm. you never quite know what's going to happen next or what they're going to do next. So you've got the differing pressures of safeguarding and teaching them and managing behaviour. Mm. You also interact with parents and governors, and who all of whom have different different questions, different pressures that they put on the school. It's when you work with a lot of people, there is yeah. unpredictability to what you do, which yeah. brings in other demands. Obviously we work within various frameworks. There's safeguarding, there's Ofsted, there's SIAMS, as we're both church schools. So there's different frameworks that we have to make sure that we're working within. Obviously, as you said, COVID, that's brought an extra nuance of pressure and demands on the schools over the last couple of years. And then all of a sudden, all sorts of bizarre things can come out of the woodwork, something in the community, an issue that you have to deal with. That means that you have to think very clearly and quickly to make good decisions.
Yeah, and I think it's those high pressure ones, isn't it, that are the most difficult ones. As you say, you've got lots of general ongoing pressures. So you've mentioned things like Ofsted. So
yes.
that's that, you know, framework that schools are judged against. And as you say, there's sometimes daily pressures that will pop up, difficulties and challenges that children are facing, that families are facing as part of that process. And then some of these unforeseen ones. What are some of the unforeseen ones that have come out of the blue that perhaps you've had to deal with?
Yeah, so I think probably the one that comes to mind first and foremost was when we had a threat of someone coming past the school and threatening to shoot at the playground at pickup time at the end of the day. So that was quite a difficult and challenging one to deal with, and quite a lot of external agencies were involved at the time. I mean, it entirely turned out to be a hoax, and it was nothing as difficult as it sounds. But in that moment, it wasn't until actually, you know, into the evening of that day that we actually knew that it was a hoax and nothing was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'm hearing this, isn't it? And I'm sure our listeners are as well, and thinking, oh my goodness, you know, the threat of a drive-by shooting at a primary school is like horrendous, isn't it? So I just wonder if we explore that one, if it's not too traumatic for you. And in many ways, perhaps some of our listeners will go, but I've never had a drive-by shooting. I've never had that kind of pressure. But for each of us, we'll have perhaps been in those extreme moments. So if we would take that one, what are some of the elements or moments that were difficult within that particular scenario, and what was the kind of impact on your thinking? So, yeah. you know, when that came in and someone gives you that, you get that phone call to say, this is what we're going to do. What were the pressures for you in those moments?
Well, I mean, our first thought was, here we have 75 children, as we had at the time in our school, we have a duty of care to keep them safe and to keep the community safe. So regardless of anything else that went on that day, the children's safety and the safety of the staff in school was paramount. So, you know, my first thought was about, right, how can we ensure that they are kept safe, but that also we stay true to what to our core purpose. So our vision is to cherish all and achieve together. Mm. So actually that, you know, the day became about cherishing them, keeping the children safe, but making sure that they were as unaware as possible of what was going on and the changes that were happening. So, you know, the first thought was, well, the thought was around how are we going to keep them safe and keep true to our vision at that point. It was also about making sure that the right people knew. And it's thinking, needing to think very carefully and quickly about who needed to know, who needed to be informed when and where, without causing mass panic, because actually the content of the threat was talking about anybody coming in and out of the school at that time could be in danger. So it was trying to look within the parameters of what we were being told. But it was also just take, I think, you know, we had to act very rapidly, but at the same time, we just, you know, I just felt the need to take a moment just to really sit and consider what our next steps were, because we needed to communicate everything to the children, to the staff, to the governors, to the parents, really clearly and concisely, because we knew this was going to be a moment of panic as and when we were sort of dealing with the impact of that information coming out.
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is a really difficult scenario, isn't it? But what I love about the way you were dealing are a couple of key things. One, you've talked about taking that back to your core vision, which for you was actually about cherishing the children and the kind of community that you had there. So you, even in that moment of pressure, you held on to that vision. In one sense, that almost gave you like a guiding light through the moment.
Yeah.
You then had this tension around communication, but because of actually the threat itself, there was this, how do we manage this communication without causing obviously natural panic for people? And so you've got those tensions there. How do I communicate, but how do I stop panic? Which again, in these moments of high pressure is often the case. But you use your vision as your guiding light as part of that to think, what does this look like in this moment? So you talked about some of those tensions. What then was the impact on your thinking? Because you and I will know, because we've talked about this, that our brain has different component parts. There is that logical part, which we're particularly using now as you're reflecting back and looking at it and go, yeah, well, it was, these were the types of issues. But in those moments, we've got emotional things coming into our mind as well. So what were some of the emotional feelings that you were going through in that kind of moment?
Yeah, so from an emotional point of view, you know, when anything in that sort of difficult situation hits you, you kind of, your emotions spike, don't you?
Yeah,
You fill with adrenaline, but you know that initial spike will pass and you just need to take that moment to let it pass, because actually that allows you to think more clearly and be more confident in the decisions that you're making.
Mm.
So, you know, that was my sort of first emotional reaction. Then actually it was who or what can help me in this situation. You know, I like to work collaboratively. I like to talk things through as part of the way that I work. So it was finding my head of school, so my key senior person who I could talk it all through with before we were even making that plan, because actually she would have a different perspective, and let's share those that perspective together to make that plan.
Yeah. So there are two really important points there already, actually, which I'm picking up for our listeners. And that first thing is time.
Absolutely.
Even when you, knowing that I've got an emotional spike happening here, giving myself a bit of time, and even in these high pressure moments where part of our brain is going to be saying to us, you haven't got time, you've got to make a decision, it's still saying, actually, I can take time here to make this decision. So that's a key first component. And then what I love what you're talking about there is knowing who you are and the way you work, which was collaborative, and saying, well, even in this moment, I need to work to my strengths and to work collaboratively. So the thinking, again, they're going on, I need time, I need to work the way that I work best, which for you was kind of collaboration.
Absolutely. And we were able to pick up on the way that I've collaborated with certain people before, because actually I know what their strengths are, and it was picking up on those individual people who I thought could help me at that moment and bringing them in alongside, so that actually when we were distributing the information more widely, that we already had, there was already a small core of people who were on site with the
making. And again, another brilliant top tip for our listeners, it's thinking, I don't have to be alone here. You've said that you thought carefully about who you had around you and what they could bring to it. So you almost go, well, I can bring this, but I've got deficits in this area, but they can bring that. And so you almost form a they talk about, don't they, you know, two minds are greater than one. Well, actually three or four or even greater. And so there's this sense of thinking about the skills and talents they'll bring in. But I think from my experience as well, when I've not been in the same scenario as you, but I've been in some quite challenging ones as well in my previous role as a head teacher. And just that ability that when you work with people, there is a reassurance to calm your emotions that actually, if this doesn't go brilliantly, we've done this together and we stand together. Absolutely. Whereas if you go telling people what to do, you can feel that sense of leaping high and dry, if it doesn't go quite so well. So there's power in that collaboration, isn't there?
Absolutely. And I just felt that in that moment, there was going to be a number of jobs that needed doing. I was aware that, you know, we were going to have to communicate with police, we're going to have to communicate with governors, we're going to have to communicate with the staff, children, parents, that we needed a greater strategy. And I know that I'm better at sort of processes and following things through, whereas my head of school is particularly good with dealing with people and their emotions. So actually at that point, it was a case of dividing and conquering and playing to our strengths. And just knowing that, you know, there was going to be some fallout of this, whatever the outcome was. But we knew we'd work together like that before. Let's build on what we've done before. We're quite good at reviewing how things have gone, looking at the strengths and the things maybe haven't worked so well, and building on what we've done previously in not such a difficult situation.
Yeah. And that's right. And it's drawing upon where you've used these principles before as part of that process, think, okay, it wasn't as bad then, but I can at least draw from that. And I, in fact, the blogs that I'm writing alongside this particular podcast, where we're looking at thinking clearly under pressure, that's one of the blogs I talk about that, trying to mirror actually processes you've used in other contexts. So particularly if you're working with others then in scenarios where you're under pressure, it feels familiar and comfortable because, oh, hang on, this is a bit like when we lost the guinea pig or whatever. And you go, well, no, this is far bigger than losing the guinea pig, but at least the process feels the same.
And you find some comfort in that rather than, you know, the situation you're dealing with in that moment is so uncomfortable. You're seeking comfort, familiarity and security, because that's where your confidence comes from. And we knew that in that moment we had to present a confident, united front to everybody else. There was going to be some fallout out around this.
Yeah. And there is a sense, if you can't bring that to the moment, then actually it almost impedes or increases the negative of what could go on and impedes your progress in it. So your confidence can breed confidence in others. And by working together with that, that helps manage your emotions and theirs. So the way you're describing it, sounds, of course, as we look back on it, you're dealing with this very clearly and you're thinking clearly under pressure. But for many, perhaps listening to this, they're going, wow, that sounds amazing, but I think I would melt when that comes along. So there will be some emotional thinking that comes into our heads, perhaps linked to the magnitude. And like you talked earlier in this particular one, the safety and the Absolutely. Cherishing of your children was most important. So can you look back and think of what were some of the emotional kind of triggers that are coming in, and how did you manage? You've talked about managing some emotions by working with others and all the rest of it, but you did have emotions at that time?
I did.
Yeah, you're not a robot, are you?
Not at all. So, yes, when I originally got the information, my heart just sank and I just remember being terrified, actually. It was my very first thought, you know, for myself, for my staff. We are there in loco parentis for our children. And I couldn't imagine anything worse than actually a number of our children coming to harm, which was the threat that was potentially facing us in that moment. So I know that the best way I deal with my own emotions is to get outside, is to walk. And we are really lucky where we are. We have got a beautiful site with some lovely green areas. So I just closed my computer down. Closed my computer and just marched straight out the back door and walked a couple of laps off the school field, knowing that would just be a way for me to reconnect with nature and to just stop and think on my own before I had to face anything else.
Yeah, and again, for our listeners, this is it, what we're not telling our listeners, that when you have a moment of pressure, you have to go for a walk in the woods.
No, absolutely.
But what we're saying is, for you, you know yourself emotionally and what things help you in these moments. Yes. And for you to go outside in the woods for a piece of nature will help you to recharge. Now, bearing in mind, obviously, the scenario here where they said if people go outside, we'll shoot.
Yeah.
I assume that was in a safer space for you to do that little walk as well.
Yes.
So, but you recognise for you that what helped you manage that emotion of feeling terrified to then allow a bit of time and calm and peace. Again, if we look at some of the kind of research around people like Steve Peters and his Chimp Paradox work, giving yourself a bit of time helps to calm your emotional center, your emotional chimp. And that's a key aspect, isn't it? And also, you talked about acknowledging that emotion. I was terrified.
I really was.
And so those are two key parts. Acknowledge the emotion you're feeling, give yourself a bit of time. And the other one you did as well, which is when you're talking about the processes, you remind yourself of the time that's been okay. So you've dealt with a different pressure, but a high pressure before. How did I manage that before? How could I utilize that and work that into the system? So those three aspects were how you managed that initial emotion part.
And I think it was just important to take that moment just to enable that spike of emotion to fall a little.
Because
if I was going to... I knew I had to tell somebody else what was going on. I was about to deal with their emotion in that moment, and I had to be ready to deal with that. I couldn't be up here in the moment that my colleague was also going to be up here.
Yeah, so I think there's a real self-management bit there, isn't it? That in those, particularly if you're working with people in that under pressure moment, to recognise, to give yourself time to get yourself more level, to be able to manage some of that emotions within yourself so that when you're helping others, you've got that in place. That's a brilliant insight, Vicky. Thank you. So we're looking at some of the principles of thinking clearly under pressure today. That's our topic. And you've described for you how you've managed some of those already. In our kind of research and reading up some you know, material around this, looking at things like, for example, the High Performance podcast book has information there about managing and thinking clearly under pressure. We've got a little acronym called ARTHUR. So if you're struggling to, you're just trying to work out how can I think clearly under pressure, it's ARTHUR. And it's acknowledge the emotions, which we've touched on that one already. Recognize where those emotions are coming from. We might explore that in a bit more in a moment with your example. Then be able to focus the emotions to what's helpful. Because actually, we can ask ourselves in that moment, actually, is my thinking here helpful? Who's talking to me? Is it my emotional side or my logical side? So it's being able to focus the emotion that will help. Then understand clearly the demands, the ability that you have and the consequences. Because sometimes in these under pressure moments, we can be hard on ourselves and not think clearly. And then lastly, to realize that this is a learning opportunity. It's not a one-off. So there's a kind of acrostic for that, and those who are listening will realize, hang on, that's not a TH Arthur but an F Arthur. It's an Arthur. So let's just look in these first two. You talked about acknowledging the emotion and you said I was terrified, and then it's where they're coming from to help in these pressurized moments. So how does acknowledging the emotions for you, how does that help?
I think it just brings clarity to what you're feeling. When you get that spike in emotion, if you're able to name it and, again, just think back to maybe how you dealt with it before, then you've got a strategy. I like a strategy. If I can follow a strategy, I feel much more comfortable. If you can't, if you're struggling to name that emotion, it just feels like internal turmoil. And actually that can be something that can really inhibit the thinking.
Yeah.
Therefore, by naming the emotion, even if later you think about it, and actually, that wasn't quite what I was feeling, but if in that moment you can name it, you can deal with it.
Yeah.
And that was the clarity that I needed in that moment. And, you know, if I was feeling terrified and frightened and worried, that was a sort of prediction of how others were going to feel. I just feel that in the circumstances that we were dealing with, in that moment, it was going to be an emotional reaction from anybody that I shared this information with. So by being aware of the emotions in myself, I was aware of the potential emotions others would show. And that gave me a bit of clarity around the way that I I broke the news.
Yeah.
And it's involving my head of school out of a lesson, and it wasn't a, can I have a word at the door? It was, no, I need to find another adult to put in your classroom,
yeah,
because I need you to have this proper conversation.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
again, that preparation.
Yeah. So I love the fact that actually to help you think clearly under pressure, you had to name that emotion. But it also allowed you to then prepare, as you said, because people will probably feel a similar reaction to that. Everyone will have different, but you at least allowed you to think, yeah, if I'm feeling that, others will feel that. And then as you began to process yourself, well, where's this emotion coming from? What are my feelings within this? It allowed you to think, well, then when I'm broaching this with others, it allows me to utilize my learning, how I've worked it through, to help them be able to work that through as well and provide that sense of comfort. So when you... when we, that first one is obviously acknowledged, the next is kind of recognize where it's coming from. And in a sense, to be able to almost say that's okay. So if you think back to that moment for you, you recognize you were terrified. Yeah. And in one sense, the answer to me could be, well, of course, it's going to come from the fact someone's threatening us with a drive-by shooting.
Yeah.
But did it go any deeper than that? Were you able to recognize, kind of where that emotion was coming from?
I mean, I think part of it was, where are you trained to deal with such a thing?
Yes.
There was a moment of, oh, golly, this is so far outside of anything I've dealt with and ever believed in a school that I would be dealing with. There was a moment of, am I actually equipped to do this? But I'm going to have to. So, you know, here's the moment that we have to decide to get on with it and deal with it.
So I guess what I'm hearing there is like, totally, we're not equipped for that. And those who have ever trained to be a head teacher know there's something called the NPQH, National Professional Qualification of Headship, and nowhere in that does it talk about that kind of level.
Nothing.
So for you, there was a recognition that part of this terror comes from, am I able to deal with this? It's like, I've never been trained in this. Yeah. There's a sense then, isn't there, of, do I have the skills to do this? Because I certainly don't have the experience. I don't have the training. And so it's just recognizing, oh, this is where it's coming from. But then there was quite quickly, as you were describing, this sense of, well, I might not have been trained. It might have been part of any kind of training expertise on this, but I've got to.
Yeah.
And so what can I draw upon? So at least that ability to recognize the emotion and where it was coming from enabled you then to make the next step and see it as something, well, okay, so this is why I'm feeling this,
yes,
but I'm in this position. These are the cards that have been dealt to me today, and I have to do my best hand towards it.
Absolutely. And it was just important in that moment to recognise that we were going to have to deal with this. And I think part of the terror also came from the loco parentis aspect of the role.
Mm.
If anything had happened to any child in that situation, we had something potentially so horrific on
us. Yeah, yeah. And there is this sense, isn't there, because you're in loco parentis, that you want to, it comes back again to that cherishing of them and wanting to keep them all in your care, but knowing this was a significant threat as part of that process. So we talked earlier about our emotional reactions. And again, you and I know because we've discussed his work, but Steve Peters in his book, The Chimp Paradox, talks about our emotions as like a chimp and that the chimp language that we can use to calm that chimp comes in acknowledging the emotions, which again we picked out on that, reminding yourself of time it's okay, and giving yourself a bit of time for that logical to catch up. So we've kind of explored that already. That's just confirming what his work talks about. So in terms of then this focusing of your emotions, so we've talked about how, yeah, we've acknowledged, you've tried to draw upon other moments which were nowhere near as big, but if we're going to focus, have you ever used any of this reminding yourself of okay in managing your chimp thinking under pressure? Perhaps not even just in this scenario, but in other scenarios as well. How much of a reminding yourself is that then exploring that this emotion isn't helpful, so how do I direct that emotion?
Yeah, I think whenever you're faced with a difficult situation, and in this one it was that fear, yes, it was the chimp being frightened, because he was the one saying, I don't know how to deal with this.
Yeah.
It was the logical brain that kicked in and said, but you're going to have to. What difficult situations have you dealt with before? What can we build on? Who can we talk to? Who else can we bring into this that would support?
Mm.
But it was almost being able to separate the emotions from the logic. in that moment allowed me to deal with it with that clarity.
Yeah, because I know for some people, actually, the emotions can really take over, isn't it? And the work I do with coaching with people is being able to say to them, whose voice are you hearing? Now, again, not to confuse people listening to this, you don't actually hear an audible voice, but it's just recognizing what's the voice that I'm hearing here? Is it my emotions?
Yeah.
And actually, is that helpful? And if it's not helpful, what do I need to do to redirect this to provide the best help for myself and for others around me as part of that process, isn't it? So you talked earlier actually about really knowing yourself, because you said you know what worked for you, which was a walk out in the woods to gather your thinking, to give yourself time. And Daniel Goleman, who wrote all the stuff around emotional intelligence, it really comes in, I've got it broken down here into four parts. So it's about knowing yourself and your emotions and your triggers, then knowing how to self-regulate yourself. So for you, when you talked about that walk in the woods, that was knowing the emotions you were going through, what was being triggered, but then knowing what worked for you. So those first two parts you put into place. And then it's about knowing other people and how they might react. So again, you talked a bit about that in this scenario. And then knowing how to connect the two as kind of part of that process. So those are the four stages. So is it so important to be an emotionally intelligent leader and to know our emotions and know those strategies, particularly under pressure? So if it is the case, kind of how do you self-regulate, and do you have any further tips apart from going for a walk in the woods?
No, I think it is really important to be emotionally intelligent. When you deal with the number of people that we do day in, day out, you have to have an understanding of your own emotions and how you are likely to react to those different situations.
Mm.
You know, day to day, we deal with a lot of quite tricky situations, and you can quickly become overwhelmed by the emotions involved. So knowing what works for you and being able to put them into practice, I think, is really important, but also allows you to connect with others. You know, if you know what your emotions are, you can connect with somebody else and support them through theirs.
Yeah.
But in terms of managing the emotions, I mean, I think for me, it is being able to get out, have a walk, take a moment. I'm a Christian, I'll pray about it and just find, you know, pray that God would give me a steer on the way that he'd like me to deal with it. I can get out and exercise. It's all about just buying myself with that little bit of time, I think, just to kind of come down from that initial spike, get your jump back in order and deal with things logically.
Yeah, and I guess some of our listeners thinking, gosh, if I faced the scenarios Vicky's just talked about, whether I was a Christian or not, I'd certainly be praying because it would go, gosh, how do I deal with this? I think what you're talking about there is that blend for you is about that time.
Yeah.
Almost it's what some would say prayer is, which is going beyond yourself. But actually, even if someone isn't a Christian and isn't into prayer, it is just that moment to take a bit of time, isn't it? And that time to think and to process in a way that works for you is a key aspect, isn't it? I guess a number of things that people might, if we're looking at this emotional intelligence, understanding your emotion and theirs, that people might more regularly come across rather than a drive-by shooting or threat of, is like sometimes you have to have a difficult conversation with someone, don't you? And that puts a pressure in us, because particularly we have empathy or care for someone, but then equally we're thinking about them and their emotions, isn't it? What are they like? How are they likely to respond? What do I know about them that works well for them?
And it's being able to make that connection, isn't it? If you can connect with somebody and understand how they're likely to work or react, you can be proactive in the way that you approach them in that situation.
Yeah, yeah. So totally. So it's that, Who am I? What do I know my triggers are? How do I manage them best? Who are they?
Yeah.
What are their triggers? What helps them to manage it best? What, in my experience, have I utilized for that? So that emotionally intelligent leader, which isn't just about knowing ourselves, is it's about knowing others, can be key. And even in those ultra high pressure moments, like you've described with your scenario, again, you were thinking about, what do I know about my people? How are they likely to react? What a bit I've learned about my reaction in this moment that might be helpful as part of that process. So again, for any of our listeners thinking those kind of things through. So I mentioned earlier when talked right at the beginning about some of our research, some of the things we've looked at, and there's a really good book about the High Performance Podcast by Jake Humphries. And in that book, he talks about thinking correctly under pressure, and he talks about DAC, demands, ability, and consequences. and to help our thoughts and feelings get them under control. Because quite often we can in these moments think, I have no control here. I'm no good at anything, you know, and we can begin to catastrophize in those moments. So what they say there is to think about the demands, what actually is being required of me in this moment. And then your ability, what skills and resources actually do I have, even though we're thinking we don't have any. So to break it down and then think about the consequences, what actually is at stake here? Because sometimes, again, we can catastrophize and think, you know, our world is going to end as a result of this. So if we take each of these one by one with a demand. So, Vicky, if we were to take that situation you mentioned about earlier, what actually were the demands on you? Because we can begin to think, oh, no, the whole world revolves around me. What when you unpick it now or at the time, what was actually required of you in that moment? Because you couldn't have controlled everything.
No, not at all. I think actually in that moment, it was to make a plan and to communicate and implement that plan clearly, with clarity and with calmness. Mm. To make sure that everybody was kept safe, that everybody felt cared about, that they were cherished, that everybody was very clear about their part in that plan. Mm. And then after the event, which actually it turned out that nothing actually happened and all the children went home absolutely fine, but it was after that, it was communicating why our end of the day protocols had to change, why we'd had to call parents in early because we hadn't given any information at that point. Mm. It was communicating it afterwards as well. Mm. It was knowing that that communication was going to be my key role at that point.
So there can be a sense, can't there, in these high-pressure moments where we feel we're responsible for everything. Yes. And you've talked about the tension of the safety and well-being, but there is in those delicate moments, isn't there, that there will be some things beyond our control. And you, as it turned out, fortunately, it wasn't as explained to be. But in that moment, you can feel like you have to keep everyone safe. Clearly, your priority is to do that. But what you were able to unpick is actually what is required of me in this moment is to make a plan, to do our best to keep people safe, to keep the communication going. And you basically took that down to three core elements. These are actually the demands on me. Everything else, of course, you know, I know I want to achieve, but if we were to replay this, this is what I must achieve. And you broke it down to the bits that were within your control as part of that. So I think that's really helpful for our listeners when they're in that high pressure moment to go, it feels like everything is my responsibility, but actually, what is my responsibility here? What can I control? And to be able to break that down, you've given some great examples. So if you think about ability, how do you work through the kind of ability in that kind of moment? So, you know, some of the key questions around what resources do I have, what skills do I have, what do I need help with, what can I focus on? So when you're thinking about your ability in that moment, because we can tend to think, I can't do this is way out, like you did initially, you said, like, we never had training for this. So how did you break that down, either at the time or as you look back now?
I think, as I said earlier, I like to work collaboratively. So that brings the ability of two already into the frame. And so, you know, I know that I like to work collaboratively. So by bringing in two of us, it was very clear that we kind of divvied up the roles and I took on the role of the sort of strategy and the communication aspect, whereas my head of school took on the kind of dealing with the children and the staff in that moment, because we knew that those were the roles that fitted us better. At that moment, we also thought about who the other people were that we needed to bring in alongside us. We only between us have, the heads of two. Mm. Who is it? Key people that we needed. The police were involved. Our chair of governance were involved. Somebody from the local authority was also involved in that moment. So a lot of being on the telephone and trying to bring in the expertise that we lacked and the advice that we needed to handle the situation carefully. Mm.
So there's a real sense there, I suppose there's an honesty in that moment, isn't it? What can I bring? Where are my gaps?
Yeah.
Where can I find support for my gaps? So in those moments of high pressure, that really being honest with yourself about the ability and being okay with that, and saying, okay, so this is what I can focus on. So you recognize I'm the strategist. you know, your colleague was the one that you thought she's going to be best placed to bring that common stuff. And you also recognize you can't do everything in that moment, isn't it? And if you were to try that, you'd end up not supporting one section in the way you wanted to. Yeah. So it's that recognition, both what ability you can bring, what you can't, but also in terms of your finite energy and finite time, isn't it, within that, to enable that spread. And so the third one is the consequences. So sometimes we can think that the rest of our life is going to be, you know, affected by this. And clearly in these high pressure moments, they can have a significant moment, an impact on that. So when you, you know, as you look back now, that kind of worry that, gosh, this is a really significant thing, this could impact significantly. How did you get balance? How did you actually get down to what was actually at stake here?
I think in the initial moment when that fear hit, there was a little bit of catastrophizing. Mm. You know, we could end up with a horrific situation on our hands.
Yeah.
But I think the way I deal with a lot of things is make a plan and follow it. You know, let's name those things that we're really worried about. Let's think about what the real difficulties are. Okay, now we've done that. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Become very practical in that moment. Let's go back to the plan and the people that can help. It's knowing what the sort of big consequences are, because it can't be as bad as that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I guess for some people, they won't perhaps be, you know, quite as into their plans as you've described yourself, but it's for our listeners to be able to unpick. Okay, so in this moment, then what it is about trying to do is just really refine it down. Yeah. What's most important here? And then when you're able to think about what's most important, then that's where you can focus those energies. Because in, to a certain extent, we can only do what we can do in these high pressure moments, can't we? We can't control the destiny. We can't control everybody or any moment. But what we can do is go, what's really important? And for you, you unpicked actually is about communication and care with people.
Absolutely.
So whatever happens here, I want to be able to tell the story that I communicated well and I cared for people. And the hope is, it's also been about, for you, a key thing was safety.
Absolutely.
And so the hope is, if I communicate and care, people will be saying, well, we were definitely done that. And we did our very best, as much as within our power, to keep people safe as part of that process.
Absolutely. And it was about what our bottom line was in that moment. If we've done that, you know, safety is that key thing in that moment.
Yeah.
And we had to do our best to ensure the safety of everybody.
Yeah. And so the last kind of part of this whole thinking clearly under pressure process that actually helps us manage this is not seeing these moments as pass fail, but actually seeing as a learning journey. Now, I know in one sense, as I'm describing this, and as listeners are hearing this, thinking, well, Colin, surely dealing with a potential drive-by shooting of a primary school is definitely a pass fail moment. We need to get this right. And of course, there is that case. You want to get things right. But if we view them as a pass fail moment, we put intense pressure on ourselves. So is this right, though, or is it actually when you're dealing with these really difficult moments, no, Colin, it's pass-fail, but does thinking about this in the long term, does that help in any way to manage those emotions?
I mean, it did initially feel a little bit like pass-fail.
Yeah.
But in any sort of critical incident, if you want to put it that way, it is about what we can learn from it.
Mm.
And as the realisation dawned, once we'd sent all the children home and we were all safe, that it actually, this had been a hoax.
Mm.
And whilst it was horrible to go through it, we spent quite a long time kind of doing a post-mortem, if you want to call it that, which is probably the wrong thing to call it in that situation, but going through what had worked, what had been successful, what hadn't been successful.
Mm.
Because there are things that you can learn from the way that you handle anything. And the story that we did tell in that moment of the way we showed care and cherished everybody within that community. So, you know, everything is an ability, you know, in every situation there is an ability to learn something.
Yeah.
And I think if you try and keep that open-mindedness from as early on in the situation as you can, you're going to learn more and be able to be more adaptive and creative going through it.
And I think the more you practice that method of analysing and doing the after action review in that process and saying, yeah, what can we learn from this? What could we have done better? When you face the next pressure moment, yes, whatever that might be, and obviously they'll be different, you've almost begun to train yourself as seeing this as an ongoing learning experience for you and your community, which in a strange way can take a fraction of the pressure off in those high pressure moments. So the more you review and do that practice, isn't it, with the little traumas rather, yep, than the bigger ones, it gets you into that mode and allows you to just see this as an ongoing learning journey. So
at school, we teach the children that we try and teach them to have a growth mindset and to be resilient and to learn from maybe the mistakes or the things that they could have done better. In a sense, we have an opportunity to model to the children that as adults, we also use growth mindsets and we know that we could always make things better next time. We didn't necessarily see it at that very first moment as that opportunity, but it was an opportunity to do that as we reviewed it.
Afterwards. Yeah. So I love that actually. And whether, again, our listeners are in organisations like schools working with children or whether they're businesses or charities where they're working with adults, it's that principle. If as a community, you kind of learn from those experiences, it actually helps you as a community to develop your both individual but also community resilience and become learning communities as part of that process. So then we turn these high pressure moments, which nobody would choose, they actually in a weird way become a gift to grow and develop from, and actually then these horrible moments have some value rather than just being a horrible moment.
Absolutely. And they do bring the community together in it, and it gives everybody a common purpose to work through and to work towards, which, as you say, you don't want to work through those situations every day, but it was a very good way of bringing the community together around that core purpose of cherishing all.
Yeah, brilliant. Vicky, it's been really helpful, and thank you for sharing your story with us, just in terms of, you know, what was a really difficult time for you and the community, and obviously we're highly thankful that everyone was safe.
Absolutely.
And it turned out to be a rather unpleasant hoax, but there was, you know, as it turned out, no danger. So, you know, it's wonderful you're here with us and that every member of your community was kept safe. And now's our moment where we just think about, that kind of drawing together and for our listeners to get some kind of top tips for that. So what I'm going to do is just kind of summarize some of the stuff we've talked about and then give you that opportunity to give one or two top tips for your listeners from your experience about thinking clearly under pressure. And so, you know, we've talked about things like just managing your thinking under pressure using that simple acronym of just acknowledging your emotions and recognizing where they're coming from, particularly if you know as an individual you feel those emotions. And then asking yourself, where are these coming from? Is it helpful? And focusing your thinking around something that's going to be more helpful and understanding more clearly what the demands and the ability and the consequences actually are on you. And then begin to realize that this is a learning opportunity and that can help us to think more clearly under pressure. So that's the kind of process that people can go through. But what are your top tips? If you were to distill this down, and we've heard from you today, this is, you know, was clearly a very high-pressure moment, and people's might be everyone's high-pressure moments are different and we have different thresholds, but what would be your one or two top tips that you would say to people if you're facing pressure, these are the things to hang on to?
I think the first one would be is to see every situation as a learning opportunity. What is it that you can learn from the situation that you've gone through? What were the things that worked really well? And you know, that's worth celebrating that those things have gone well, but actually not seeing the things that didn't go so well as an opportunity to improve and doing that thought process before you're hit with the high pressure thinking opportunity, but also just to practice your strategies for managing your emotions before you get into that high pressure environment. So that again, you can go to a place of safety. And I know that if I can get outside and just walk, even if it's just for a minute, I can manage a situation far better than if it's demanded in the moment. But I've practiced that and I know it works, so it's always become autopilot.
Yeah,
I can do that.
So, yeah, I think that sense of creating your own autopilots, yes, then when you're under extreme pressure and your cortisol will be released in your system, it will affect some of your thinking. But if you practice that and you've got that muscle exercised, then when it comes to it, you're more likely to be able to follow that through. So I love that principle of just beginning now, even in those medium pressure moments, review them, see them as learning. So you're more likely to take the pressure off yourself in those big high pressure moments. And then, as you say, to really know yourself around what are my emotional reactions? How do I manage those best? What do I do to get my emotional control so that when you're in those extreme moments, you know, actually, and this is what works for me, just to work through those emotions first so that you can then think clearly under pressure as part of that process. So I think those are really helpful tips, Vicky. Thank you. Good. And thank you for joining us today on the Leadership Lounge.
Lovely.
Great. So thank you everyone for joining us on the Leadership Lounge. We look forward to seeing you again next month for our wonderful next topic. But in the meantime, thank you for Vicky.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us on the Leadership Lounge.